Chapter 3, Getting Down to Business in California. Ma and Pa set up shop. Bob Trinchero remembers that his mother Mary cried not just that first day, but throughout their whole first winter in St. Helena, and right on into early spring. For the children, too, the new home in Napa Valley took some getting used to. Young Vera, who was used to direct dialing in Manhattan, couldn't believe that when she picked up the phone in St. Helena, she had to talk to an operator to place a call. At school, the local kids thought Vera was European because of her New York accent. One of her first friends, another girl who lived at El Bonita, taught Vera to walk barefoot, and by the end of her first summer, the city girl was clambering over rocks and catching lizards. This same friend took her to an Assembly of God church, where Vera, Catholic like the rest of the family, thought God would strike her down. The local clothes were a big change, too. In New York, Mario had always been dressed to the nines. Bob had never seen his father in the short-sleeved shirt and Levi's jeans he now wore to work in the winery every day. After Bob showed up for his first day of school in slacks, white shirt and tie, he came home and wasted no time demanding a pair of his own blue jeans. Mary took him to Goodman's, the town mercantile, for a pair so stiff they stood up on their own, and so heavily dyed they turned his legs blue when they got wet. Then there was the strange noise. In the first few weeks in St. Helena, Bob heard a buzzing sound in his ears, a whining. Finally, his family took him to the doctor, who asked where they'd moved from. The diagnosis? Country living. The high noise level of their former home on New York's west side, with constant two-way traffic and proximity to the St. Nicholas Arena with its boxing matches and wrestling, left a vacuum in the bucolic stillness and quiet of St. Helena. Eventually, the buzzing subsided. While his father worked, little Roger, too young for school, played on the dirt floor of the winery or among the felled eucalyptus trees on the property. Years later, he can still remember the pungent aromas of spilled wine and the minty smell of eucalyptus. Vera, who often took care of her little brother, would put Roger in a cardboard box and roll him back and forth on the case conveyor belt to keep him entertained. In 1948, Sutter Home Winery looked much like it had during its last harvest 30 years earlier. The Leuenbergers had painted the words Sutter Home Winery across the roof of the barn in letters the size of horses. When Mario and John Trinchero bought the property, they could have named their winery Trinchero Family Estates, as the family did much later. But the professionally painted Sutter Home Winery sign was still in fine shape. The lettering was bold enough to be visible from the air, as well as to anyone who drove by, and the cost of paint wasn't in the brothers' meager budget. They decided the name reflected a sense of heritage and quality, and they kept it. 19th-century wineries, without sophisticated mechanized pumps, had been designed to take advantage of gravity. The winery's second floor held the grape press, so the grapes could be crushed and fermented on the upper level. Then the wine would flow down to the storage tanks on the level below. At that time, the prominent grape varieties in Napa Valley were Carignan and Palomino, which had not yet given way to noble varieties like Chardonnay and Cabernet Sauvignon. In fact, during the 1940s and 1950s, wine grapes were generally classified as either black or white, and neither fetched much money. The late 1940s were a tough time to enter the wine business. Prices had dropped from a wartime high of $125 per ton to less than $50 per ton in 1947. Most California wine was sold in bulk by larger producers to smaller wineries or bottlers elsewhere in the United States. Jug wines constituted the largest sales category and sold for less than a dollar per gallon. the Trinqueros purchased all their dessert wines and some of their dry table wines in bulk, bottling them themselves and attaching the Sutter Home label. At the winery, they produced a few varietal wines and a better class of jug wine, crushing grapes purchased from local farmers, fermenting the juice, and storing the wine in tanks prior to bottling. The family work ethic. From the first day, the whole family pitched in to make Mario's dream a reality. Even Mary, despite her initial ambivalence about moving to California, never stopped being a team player. She'd rise at 5 a.m. every morning with Mario, work a 10-hour day on the bottling line, cook the family meals, and keep the books. They both took a power nap right after lunch and then got up and went right back to work. Mario was the salesman, and his brother John was the winemaker, but they both worked in the cellar, crushing 3 tons of grapes during that first 1948 harvest. Even 12-year-old Bob was put to work bottling just a few days after he arrived from New York. At first, this new life seemed like an adventure, like vacation. But as the months rolled by, Bob realized it wasn't. Because the family didn't have enough money to buy new bottles, Mario took Bob, and later Roger, out driving from winery to winery, collecting extra bottles wherever they could, a practice they continued well into the 1970s. Sometimes bottles came with the corks still in them, like those from a failed Gamay Beaujolais experiment at Beaulieu Vineyard as late as 1972. Beaulieu had punched the corks into the bottles to pour out the ruined wines, so the Trinquero family came up with a special hook to extract each cork bottle by bottle. Then they washed the bottles, sterilized them, and refilled them with their own wine. Vera worked the bottling line alongside Bob after school and on weekends. Bob was the official bottle handler, but Mario showed Vera how to apply the screw caps and the wet seals, which shrank as they dried, onto the half-gallon and gallon jugs. Vera put them in the cases, and then Mary and Nina, John's wife, labeled each by hand. Finally, Mario stacked the cases at the front door to be loaded up for delivery. When Roger got older, he helped out on the bottling line too, while Bob graduated to more strenuous tasks, like cleaning out tanks and barrels or shoveling the mash of grape stems and seeds called pomace left over after pressing. After dinner, Mario, John, and their friends played cards, an Italian game called Pedro, in the tasting room until late at night, in the event someone dropped by to buy a bottle of wine. The family's rustic tasting and retail room, one of the first in the valley, consisted of 2 massive 10,000-gallon redwood tanks. Long before building codes regulated such enterprises, Mario and John set the tanks on piers, cut doors into them, and installed a walkway between the tanks and a little bar inside. They offered tastes to walk-in traffic 365 days a year, even on Christmas morning, keeping an eye out for visitors in and around the family holiday celebration. Often enough, someone would stop in, and Mario would return to the house brandishing $40. The Trinqueros' first Christmas in Napa Valley, just 3 weeks after the family arrived, predated the tasting room. But it was memorable for another reason. It snowed. Vera found this comforting because it reminded her of New York, though she'd never experienced snow on Christmas Day before, even on the East Coast. Mary never forgot the snow that day either. The kids were playing outside with the neighbor kids, one of whom was a boy named Jim Hunsinger, who would grow up to be an executive vice president of Trinquero Family Estates. 40 years later, at the company Christmas party, when Mary was introduced to Jim as the company's new head of production, her sharp eyes looked him up and down. December 25th, 1948, she said with her melodious, old-world accent, "You threw a snowball at our screen door." "Mom had a memory," says Bob today, laughing. "She could kill you with it." Early transitions. By the early 1950s, Sutter Home produced 52 different wines, although locals joked that the winery had only two tanks, one for white wine and one for red. It wasn't far from the truth. They were selling 65% of their wine out the front door. If you could carry or roll a container through our door, Bob remembers, we'd fill it up for you. Customers would come in and ask for a particular wine, and while Mario talked to them, Bob would go into the back room and slap on the right label. There wasn't much difference between the Chablis and the Sauternes, the Burgundy and the Claret. The relationship between Mario and his brother John wasn't always easy. While the two never came to blows, the tension in the family could be tough. One time, John grew tired of his 5-year-old nephew Roger tagging along after him, and he threw the child into an empty tank and shut the door. Roger was unhurt but scared, and Mario was furious. But John was an experienced winemaker, and growing up under his uncle's tutelage, Bob absorbed a wealth of expertise. In 1952, at the age of 16, Bob Trinchero met Evelyn Jones, daughter of a farming and ranching family, at a dance in St. Helena. Evelyn was from Napa and had been invited to the dance by one of Bob's classmates. Now married more than 60 years, they both remember the dance but disagree about the color of Evelyn's skirt, which was made by a friend. That same friend also made Evelyn's wedding dress 4 years later, after she graduated from high school. By that time, Bob was already serving in the Air Force. Both sides of the family piled into two cars and headed to the wedding in Reno, Nevada, where Mario, whom Evelyn called Dad from the start, treated them all to gambling money. Then the couple came back to St. Helena and spent their first night together at El Bonita. When Bob got out of the service, Mario said, "You know, Bob, there really isn't much of a future in the wine business. We really can't afford you. But we'll give you a part-time job until you can find something more meaningful, something with a future." It's no wonder Mario considered the wine industry a business with no future. By 1960, there were only 15 wineries in Napa Valley, and most of those bottled only a few hundred cases of wine annually. The Big Five, Beringer, Beaulieu, Inglenook, Christian Brothers, and Charles Krug, dominated the market. Small wineries like Sutter Home were just limping along. And so in 1960, John Trinchero decided to retire. Mario and Bob bought John's share in the winery. Bob, with no formal training, became the winemaker, and Evelyn joined her mother-in-law, Mary, on the bottling line. The new winemaker. Bob Trinchero likes to say that he really didn't know what he was doing when he took over as winemaker. "My dad said to me, 'Can you make wine?' Well, I'd followed Uncle John around enough, so I said, 'Oh yeah, I think I can do it.' Well, really, I couldn't. Louis P. Martini helped me out." Martini's St. Helena Winery, built in 1933, sits directly across the street from Sutter Home. Another old-school Italian like Mario Trinchero, Martini was recognized as one of Napa Valley's most skilled winemakers. And, like the Trincheros, Martini never came across as flashy or pretentious. He discussed wine with Bob, explained things, and loaned him parts when Bob's pump broke down. Joe Heitz was helpful, too, as were several other local winemakers. That cooperative spirit was a hallmark of Napa Valley's winemaking renaissance. Winemaking was traditionally a skill passed from expert to apprentice during the course of multiple harvests. In Napa, in the 1950s and 1960s, the young upstarts who wanted to rebuild the industry realized they needed to learn from each other if they were to succeed. There was no feeling of rivalry. My God, no, Bob recalls. Bob was like a sponge, absorbing as much information as he could from wherever he could. He even signed up for a 2-week short course at UC Davis, a very small class of only 15 people. During the course, Bob had dinner with Maynard Amerine, a leading wine scholar, and received valuable advice. Decades later, a gift from the Trinquero family estates would fund the construction of a campus building at UC Davis. But at the time, the novice winemaker was just a student. He holed up in the library and read and read and read. Roger and Vera grow up. When Vera finished high school in the mid-1950s, the family business couldn't afford to hire her. The payroll was limited to Mario, Mary, Bob, and Evelyn, and they were barely getting by. Vera had been working part-time in high school for a town judge, so after graduation, she went to work for him full-time. When that judge died, she worked for the law firm that took over his practice and continued to do so for a total of 24 years as a legal secretary, during which she developed impressive administrative skills, honed her sharp, clear communication style, and attained an acute understanding of legal processes. All this was invaluable to the growing winery and put to good use every weekend when she managed Sutter Home's growing correspondence. Vera married Ray Torres, who worked for a local construction company and who was one of her brother Bob's first friends in St. Helena. On the high school football team, Ray had been quarterback to Bob's wide receiver, and the two teenage boys had enjoyed some good times with the wine that Bob snuck from Sutter Home. Vera and Ray had two sons, Tony and Bobby, who were born in 1959 and 1960, just 10 months, 3 weeks apart. The boys helped out around the winery just like Vera and her brothers had when they were kids. By 1967, when the boys were around 8 years old, they were putting the plastic seals on the caps, shimmying into the old oval fermentation tanks to scrape them out to get rid of the crystal tartrates that get left behind in the natural course of wine aging, and cleaning out disused barrels. Later, once Bob and Evelyn's son and daughter, David and Gina, were old enough, Tony and Bobby introduced their younger cousins to these tasks. Tony and Bobby were the ultimate big brothers, remembers David. This was around 1981, when Vera and her husband divorced, and when her brother Bob said they could finally afford to pay her. So Vera officially joined Sutter Home Winery. She was thrilled to be working full-time with her family, remembers Tony, and so happy to be able to contribute to the professional experience she brought from her legal career. By the early 1960s, Roger was a star linebacker on the football team at St. Helena High School, which earned him a 4-year scholarship to UCLA and made him the first Trinquero to attend college. Roger played football for 2 years at UCLA. Then he was transferred to Weber State University in Utah on another football scholarship. After graduation, Roger was offered $150 a week to play for a semi-pro team in the San Francisco Bay Area. But after 15 years of football, he was burned out. The Vietnam War was in full swing, and at the relatively mature age of 22, Roger was drafted into the U.S. Army. In 1972, after 2 years of service, he returned to Napa Valley, where his father and brother were ready to hire him full-time. Early ups and downs. As Bob learned his craft, the winery struggled. Mario was turned down for a $5,000 bank loan and briefly entertained a $100,000 offer to sell the winery. When a prospective buyer tried to shave $10,000 from his original price, Mario broke off negotiations. For the Trinquero family, the future seemed uncertain. However, during this era, American lifestyles were changing rapidly, and wine was on the upswing. Julia Child arrived on the airwaves as the French chef. Jackie Kennedy installed a French chef in the White House. Europeans traveled to the United States, bringing their cultural habits, and thanks to the era's ongoing prosperity, more and more Americans vacationed in Paris and Rome. These combined influences resulted in a greater exposure to and appreciation of fine wines and fine dining. In the United States, wine began to lose its reputation as cheap swill and became perceived as the cultured drink Europeans considered it to be. Americans also enjoyed more leisure time, as many jobs shifted from blue-collar to white-collar. By 1960, the customary half-day of work on Saturdays disappeared. The rest of the working days grew shorter, and vacation days and paid holidays increased. More women joined the workforce, and the entire population became more educated, with a spike in high school and college diplomas as the baby boom generation completed school. Perhaps Mario sensed these cultural changes, which increased wine drinking, and encouraged him to stick to the business. Or perhaps bankers saw the light as they themselves became wine consumers. Things looked up for the Trinqueros. By 1963, Mario obtained a $32,000 loan from Wells Fargo Bank, and Sutter Home was able to retire its debts, make needed improvements to the winery, and purchase higher quality grapes. Money management. To the day he died, Mario insisted that only family be trusted with money. He did all of his accounting the old-fashioned way, on his knuckles. And Bob Trinquero likes to joke that his father kept three sets of books. The first to show the government. The second to show the government if they didn't believe the first. And the third, well, those nobody saw. Mario himself went to the bank every day to deposit the money from the cash box, enlisting one of his kids or, later, one of Vera's boys to help him count it first. If the tally came out a little short, Mario would take out his wallet and make up the difference. If it came out a little ahead, he'd pocket the difference, so that the number was always right on the nose. Understandably, this could be frustrating for Bob's wife, Evelyn, the bookkeeper. After the bank, Mario would stop by Ray's place on Main Street in downtown St. Helena for a martini with the regulars. Even after Mario died and the business became more profitable, Mary continued to keep track of the week's retail room earnings herself. On weekends, she took the money, sometimes as much as $3,000, back to her modest home behind the winery and kept it under the seat of her sewing chair until the bank opened on Monday or until Roger came to pick it up from her. From the beginning, Mary organized the family finances. She was famous for the envelopes she kept tucked away in New York, one for rent, one for food, one for miscellany. In 1966, when Bob and Evelyn had just adopted their second child but were still sharing the house behind the winery with Mario and Mary, they found a home they wanted to buy for $11,500. A bank loaned them a good portion of the cost, but they were still short. "I talked to my mother about it," Bob says. Quietly, she went to her room and came back with one of her envelopes. It contained exactly $2,000. It was all the money she had saved in 18 years, from 1948 to 1966, and she gave it to me. Another envelope Mary kept, even during the poorest years, was for charity, a practice that clearly made an impression on young Vera, who in the coming years would become widely known for her generous charitable donations. Whether the family lived in an unheated two-room cottage behind El Bonita, or as they did eventually in their own home behind the winery, Mary made sure that giving back to the community was a priority. It was our parents' way of appreciating the many ways our family had been blessed, says Roger, and it's a philosophy that has guided us ever since. Bagna Cauda, a Piemonte tradition in St. Helena. In the earliest days of Sutter Home, the Trinqueros brought the Italian tradition of Bagna Cauda to Napa Valley. A dish from Piemonte, Bagna Cauda infuses olive oil with garlic, butter, anchovies, and herbs to be consumed fondue style with fresh bread and vegetables. Each year, at the end of the harvest, Mario and Mary would open their home to every employee to celebrate around a cask of Baña Cauda, and that tradition was continued by Bob and Evelyn Trinquero. When the size of the company outgrew the size of their home, they moved the tradition to the winery. To this day, once the last grapes are picked, everyone gathers at Trinquero Napa Valley for Baña Cauda. The annual event is one of the most important for the family and always has a remarkable diversity of generations, mixed with employees of many decades and dear friends and neighbors from up and down the valley.